This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 86, caring for nursing home residents at risk for falling. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome to this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And my name is Will Smith.
And we are your co-hosts for this episode. Very important information in this episode. We're going to be talking about one of the most common injuries that we encounter as nursing home abuse attorneys, nursing home neglect attorneys, and that is injuries from falls that occur in nursing homes, how and why they're prevalent in nursing homes, and what we can do to prevent them. And we're not doing that alone today. We have a special guest. And who is that guest, Will?
That guest is Teresa Boynton. She is a Hillrom clinical consultant on safe patient handling and mobility, a position she has held for about 3 years. She assists healthcare facilities across the U.S. with implementing and sustaining these types of programs, which includes a focus on preventing patient and resident falls. Prior to this, she worked for Banner Health for over 30 years. She led the Banner Health Safe Patient Handling and Falls Prevention Team. She developed and worked with a Banner team on validating and implementing the Bedside Mobility Assessment Tool for Nurses, or BMAT, and she has authored two articles on the BMAT. She is certified by the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals. She's presented at numerous conferences, including the 2017 National Fall Prevention Conference on Mobility is a Fall Prevention Intervention, and at the 2016 Greenhouse Long-Term Care Conference on Meaningful Life and Mobility Safe Lifting Practices. So to say the very least, she is definitely a well-recognized expert in the area of falls and fall prevention. And we are delighted to have her today.
Yeah, Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Great. So, Teresa, as we mentioned before we brought you on, one of the most, I mean, if not the most common injury that we see as attorneys is injuries from falls in nursing homes, in nursing homes. And so we're really happy that you agreed to come on to talk about the different aspects of fall risks in nursing home residents. And I think the first general question that we have for you today is, why is the senior population more at risk than the general population for falls in the first place, whether or not they're in a nursing home? Like, why is that?
Well, there are a number of factors that play into that. Typically, as we get older, our risk factors increase. And especially if we're looking at people 65 and older, if we get into that even older category of 85. And what we usually see are one or more risk factors, sometimes significantly more than one or more risk factors, such as muscle weakness, becoming more fatigued more easily, gait and balance disturbances can increase for a number of reasons. It could be because of vestibular disorders, a number of disease processes that can impact both balance and gait. Poor vision or visual impairment can lead to balance, gait disturbances, and again, just not being able to navigate through your environment as easily or as safely. Delirium, depression can have an impact. Those are considered risk factors. Cognitive functional impairment, and again, these are things that we're typically, as we age, we start to see more of these risk factors. Orthostatic hypotension or postural hypotension. When you go from lying down to sitting to standing up, a number of things happen within our bodies to allow us to not pass out. But as we get older, some of these functions aren't working as well. We don't respond as quickly. So we're more likely to become dizzy, lightheaded. And then again, that can lead to falls. There may be some laboratory abnormalities, low platelet count, anemia, hypoglycemia, hyperglycemia. Another one that we see a lot of, especially as we get older, is urinary urge incontinence. In other words, got to go to the bathroom, got to go now, got to go fast. And that definitely can contribute to falls. Nocturia, having to urinate frequently at night and then getting up. And again, a sense of urgency, not being quite oriented, that can definitely lead to falls. There are also high-risk medications that are attributed or contribute to or associated with falls: sedatives, hypnotics, anti-anxiety agents. There's a long list of medications that can contribute to falls.
And
so it's a variety of factors.
I see that. So understanding that, there's a, I don't know what this, if the statistic is true, but they say something along the lines of, like, most automobile accidents, if you're involved in them, occur within a mile of your home. Is there any such, I don't want to say the same statistic, but where are falls based on these symptoms? Where are falls most likely to occur? Is it getting out of bed because of that sense of urgency? Like, where is it most likely to be that a nursing home resident would fall?
Well, and if we're talking about nursing home residents, there is some research. The research is, it's not maybe as strong as we'd like it to be, because different nursing homes will have a different case mix, a different type of residents. But what we do know based on the research is that, nursing home residents are at higher risk of falling than elderly folks in the community. Falls in residents, homes, in nursing homes, tend to take place around the bathrooms and in the bathrooms more so than in common areas. So a resident is more likely to fall in their own room, in their bathroom, or on the way to the bathroom. Some research indicates that sit to stand or stand to sit transfers are associated with a higher percentage of falls than, for instance, walking. And then some long-term care research indicates that about 25% of falls are linked to walking to the bathroom or are falls in the bathroom, particularly during the night. Again, get up, have that sense of urgency, not well-oriented, and fall either on the way to the bathroom or in the bathroom.
I see. And you listed several factors that increase the risk of someone falling. One of them was, have they fallen before? And this is something that, you know, we get questions from clients about, but if you've fallen before, why does that increase the likelihood that you will fall again?
Well, and again, a number of factors play into that, and there is some research that really does support that. Fear of falling may contribute to the increased risk of falling. You're afraid of falling, you've already fallen once, so you limit your activity. By limiting your activity, you're becoming more deconditioned, you're becoming more weak, and so then when you finally do decide to get up, afraid, you're anxious, and you now are more deconditioned, you're weaker. If a person has previously fallen, and even if they've had a minor injury, that causes pain, distress, and they just don't have the reserve, the functional reserve to want to get up and walk again. So even fainting or feeling uncomfortable, you go to rise up and you know that you've fallen before and you're starting to rise up and you realize that you're becoming dizzy. So it's like, no, I don't want to move. So there is research that shows that after a nursing home resident, or frankly anyone in the community, has fallen, that they're more afraid, and then that does increase their risk of falling again.
So that makes a lot of sense, and actually from that risk assessment, in terms of if they fall and again increase that risk, there seems to be a lot of factors that could be observable by family members that would lead to the next fall. So for example, you said that, you know, they have a fear of falling, so they might not participate in physical activities, which would make them weaker, which again would make them more susceptible to the next fall. So can you kind of walk us through some things that family members can do, maybe some best practices for family members of loved ones that are in nursing homes, what they can do to observe, what they can observe, and what they then can do to help prevent the next fall?
Well, I think you mentioned a good point. The family members can be observant and then can share their concerns in a productive way with the staff of the nursing home. If they can be communicating with aides, it's like, have you noticed a change? in my loved one? Have you seen that they're getting more weak? Or when I visited them this afternoon, it appeared to me that they were having a significantly harder time getting up out of their chair. They're having a difficult time going from sitting to standing. So family members being aware of those types of things. And then, looking at what are the resources that the nursing home has in place to assist their family member? And are those readily available? If the resident needs a walker, is the walker close by? Is it in good repair? So family members looking for those types of things. And then, because it's something that I'm so involved in, I also think that some nursing homes have good, safe resident handling and mobility programs where they frequently use lifts. They use mechanical lifts to help with transferring residents. So if a resident is having a difficult time getting from sit to stand, then family members would notice, well, the caregiver comes in, the aide, the nurse comes in, and they're bringing in a sit to stand lift and helping my loved one get up that way and transferring to the bathroom. So they're aware that the resident needs a level of assistance. So I would, as a family member, I'd be looking at what type of assessment or screening is the nursing home doing. Are they doing it on a regular basis? So for instance, one of the tools that I'm very familiar with, helped to develop it and validate it, is the bedside mobility assessment tool for nurses. It's a screening tool, and it can be done quickly, and it really gives a good idea of what is the resident's current status. They may have been doing better in the morning. They may be able to get up more easily and walk independently to the bathroom, but in the afternoon, they're more fatigued. So let's check them out. Let's see, has their physical status changed in any significant way that now in the afternoon, yeah, I'm going to go get the sit-to-stand lift.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was actually going to say, can you walk us through a little bit of that BMAT process? Like, what's the analysis? How is it done? Like, how long does it take?
It doesn't take long. And one of the reasons I like it, especially in a long-term care and nursing home facility, is when I talk about postural hypotension, going through the BMAT, it's an assessment, it's a screening, but it also allows for some of the fluid shifts, some of the things that have to happen within the body for the person not to pass out. So it just consists of four different assessment levels. The first one is, can the resident sit in either their chair unsupported or on the bed unsupported? Can they cross their midline, which, for instance, their right hand crosses across to their left side? And can they shake your hand and maintain their seated balance? So that's the first assessment. If they can't do that, I know that they don't have enough balance, seated balance, postural stability, that I'm not going to be asking them to get up and walk independently, nor am I going to try and drag them up with a gait belt. So that's the first assessment. The next one is, we have them straighten out their leg and pump their ankle. That does a number of things. I first of all see, do they have adequate ankle control, so they're not going to have a foot drop if they get up to walk? Are they going to trip because they really can't control what's happening with their ankles? But the other thing that it does is, by pumping or flexing and pointing, moving our ankles, we're helping our calf muscles with venous return. It's helping to put some pressure on our large veins in our legs, and that's helping to get the fluid shifting back up to help with that venous return. So that's the second assessment. The third is having them stand, and we may decide that if they're really kind of weak, I just am going to stand them with a sit-to-stand lift, or if I have them stand at the edge of the bed, at the edge of the chair, I just have them stand for a while. And again, are you feeling lightheaded? Can you balance there? So I'm not going to just have them go from sitting to upright to now let's try walking, and then I'm surprised when they fall. So I just have them stand there for a period of time. How are they doing? And then the last part of the assessment is, they march in place or step in place, just little steps. Again, they're shifting their weight, pre-walking, pre-ambulation. And then they step forward with one foot, bring that foot back, step forward with the other foot, bring that back. And that is the assessment. So it's quick. And if you notice a change in the resident during that, again, you stop and go, okay, they're not doing as well with this as they did in the morning. So I'm going to go get the sit to stand lift, for instance. Or it's like, I just want to do a quick transfer, so I'm going to get my sit to stand lift. I'm a big fan of sit to stand lifts. I also like them for residents who maybe have been wheelchair bound for quite a while, but just to get them upright and standing in a safe mode well supported. It allows them to be upright again, allows with some of those fluid shifts, and frankly, it can be comfortable. We're designed to be in an upright position.
And so, what would be the difference? I'm sorry to interrupt again. But what would be the what is in your opinion is the difference, positive or negative of the BMAT versus any other fall risk assessment,
like the FRAT, the fall risk assessment tool, or the Moore scale, the Moore's fall scale.
Because it seems like yours is like it's quicker and more spot on with what you're looking for.
Well, and it's a different tool. So I absolutely agree. In the hospital setting, and frankly in the nursing home setting, there should be more than just the BMAT. There needs to be a good fall risk assessment. And in the nursing home setting, that frankly looks to me different than in the hospital setting. And so I'm very familiar with the Morris. I'm very familiar with a lot of the other fall risk assessment tools. And I think they're good. The difference with the BMAT is it really is intended to be a real time. It's like, you know, if an aide comes in and notices that the resident is sitting more slumped or saying they're feeling more tired, well, before I get them up to just walk, even though, again, they were doing it earlier, but we know that in the nursing home setting, just as in the hospital, that a patient or a resident status can fluctuate throughout the day. So it's a way of just checking in with them and, again, allowing some of those fluid shifts, a little bit of stretching, a little bit of exercise before I get you up. And then based on what I'm seeing, I'm going to choose the appropriate safe resident handling or safe patient handling piece of equipment. In the nursing home setting, I also think there needs to be other regular assessments to see if their status changing. So there are other tools that are considered mobility tools, the timed up and go test, the 4 second or 4 step balance test. So there's a number of tests that I think need to be part of a comprehensive assessment. The BMAT is that real time.
Right.
I'm noticing that there's a change in your status. I want to use the appropriate piece of equipment where I'm being either too restrictive,
sure,
but I'm absolutely not being unsafe. And I'm not risking a fall when, again, by just doing a quick assessment, I could pretty easily tell that your status has changed and I need to be more conservative because your status has changed. It now puts you at greater risk of a fall. Let's avoid the fall. Let's be more conservative. Let's get you to the bathroom on time, and not keep you either bed bound or chair bound because I'm so concerned about falls.
Sure. And let's say that we've established through the comprehensive care plan what the individual resident's risk of fall is. And let's say, for instance, that this individual is a high risk for a fall. What are some of the things in terms of execution of a fall prevention program that the nursing home can do? Like what, like in terms of like they put down floor mats, like, you know, make sure that the rounding occurs often enough to where they can go to the bathroom, that kind of thing. What are some of the things that the nursing home can do?
So a good comprehensive fall prevention program, you mentioned a couple of things that, first of all, the acknowledgement, and I think if you talk to any staff in a nursing home, long-term care facility, every single resident is at risk for falls. Some are at higher risk, and some are at higher risk for having an injury related to a fall or a fall-related injury. They fall and there is going to be an injury. So I think acknowledging that it's something that they need to really have a comprehensive program that is standardized, that has processes and procedures in place, that they look at the difference between a newly admitted resident and what their needs might be. Some research shows that new admits are at increased risk of falling, and they're also at increased risk of having a fracture when they fall. So do they have a new admit program versus a resident who has been well established at the home? We're going to kind of shift what our focus is going to be. We might look at those types of residents now. How can we optimize exercise opportunities? Are their medications well taken care of? So looking at that. I'm also looking at, if you have a comprehensive program, that there's good communication between the caregivers and the physician, that they quickly communicate that, yes, the resident status is changing. Let's look at what might be the underlying issues. Making sure that staff are empowered that they just don't feel like, oh my gosh, I can't allow these residents to fall. So that automatically leads them to, like, well, let's just keep them in their beds or keep them in a chair. And then, you know, I'm not going to be worried about that. But how do we empower, especially the aides that work in nursing homes, to really participate in what can we do to both improve the quality of life, keep residents as active as possible, but also be aware that we do not want them falling. So do they have some type of a comprehensive regular assessment that they're using? Do they have a screening program? And then do they have the right equipment? So a number of nursing homes really are using safe resident handling equipment well. They've installed ceiling lifts over patients' or residents' beds that track into bathrooms, track into the toilet, track into the shower. So that, to me, is part of a comprehensive mobilization program. But also there is definitely a focus on how can we reduce falls. How can we get our residents up, both for comfort, even if they really are having to rely on their wheelchairs? So again, do we have the right equipment to allow that? I'm going to say part of a fall prevention program also involves, do we have optimal staffing levels? Do we have enough caregivers per the case mix of our residents to adequately care for them? So when we talk about doing regular rounding, what does that really look like? At some hospitals, part of their fall prevention program is they do scheduled voiding programs. In other words, I'm going to get you up and take you to the bathroom. I'm not going to ask you, do you have to go to the bathroom? I'm going to say, let's get you up and take you to the bathroom now. So we avoid some of that sense of urgency. We stay on top of the elimination needs. We allow residents to go to the bathroom when they need to and not when it's like, oh, okay, I've got to go quickly. So that to me is a part of a comprehensive program. And is that part of the rounding, that you're going to go around and make sure that every resident is adequately toileted on a schedule.
Right. And so how would a family member know what is involved in the fall prevention program? Like how would they even know that this is what the nursing home is saying would be adequate to prevent the falls? Is there a piece of paper? Is there a document? Is there a meeting they can attend?
I would say there should be. So you should sit down with the administrator, with the charge nurse, with staff, and that should be part of the question is, what are you doing at your facility to prevent falls? So an awareness campaign. So if a family member knows going into it that falls are an issue, both in the community for elderly and homes for you know, in our homes, but in nursing homes and long-term care facilities, that what do you have in place? And do you have standard procedures and processes? And are they well communicated? So I would like it if I went into a nursing home and said, do you have a fall prevention program? Can you show me an outline? Have you documented what that looks like? And I also think a real good place to get information is to say, I'd like to talk to one of your aides on what is their training around fall prevention, because we know this is a big issue within long-term care, within nursing homes, within hospitals. So what does your program look like? I would be looking as I do a tour. I see you have a lift here, or what is that piece of equipment? Well, that's a lift. Well, it's a sit-to-stand lift. And do you use that with all of your residents on a regular basis? Are you competent with using it? And again, you might have to kind of have a list of questions ready to go. And I'd look for, do you have ceiling lifts? A number of homes, if I go in and I see that they've got a ceiling lift and that it's well placed and that it tracks into the bathroom, that tells me they're going to be getting my loved one up, helping them to toilet, getting them back to bed, and they're doing it in a very safe way. So, you know, they already have that awareness that how we mobilize or transfer our patients is important. And we want to do it safely, and we want to do it so that we can avoid falls. That's part of that. So I'd be looking for those types of things. And then, have they really optimized exercise opportunities, stretching opportunities? And I think some nursing homes make a good attempt at that. Some do, from my personal experience do a much better job, where they really are looking at what are the types of exercises we need to do, for instance, to help decrease the risk of orthostatic hypotension, postural hypotension. How do we keep our resident as active as possible? And when it becomes apparent that we're closer to end of life, how are you using exercise, stretches, your lifts as part of comfort care?
Well, excellent, Teresa. We really appreciate all this information.
It's a breadth of knowledge there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but and you're very aware of this. I know falls are just way too common, and they're preventable. Not completely, ever are they ever going to be completely preventable, but we can certainly cut down the number of falls that occur. But thank you for coming on. We really appreciated it. Rob, you got anything else?
Teresa, is there a good place to contact you if there's an audience member out there that wants to follow up with you, maybe ask you some questions? What's a good way to get a hold of you?
Yes, they're welcome to call me. I believe you have my phone number. That's 970-699-8218. Or they're welcome to email me, Teresa, T-E-R-E-S-A, dot Boynton, B-O-Y-N, T-O-N, at Hill, H-I-L-L, dash Rom, R-O-M, .com.
And we'll have it up on the screen for the audience members who are actually viewing rather than listening to the website. So, but again, Teresa, thank you so much for being on the show. That's a lot of great information, and we'll definitely need to, we'll get you back on the show to go a little bit more in depth into this stuff next time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Teresa. Have a great day.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's a lot of good information.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can see out of my periphery that Will has pulled something up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's Burger Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you looking at Burger Baby?
Because I'm starving, and this may be where I go later today.
It's supposed to be
the best burger in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. I thought that was Googie Burger.
No, it's the newest thing.
Best burger in Atlanta, as far as I'm concerned,
a One-Eared Stag,
is from the One-Eared Stag. It's not on the menu. It's an off-menu burger, which I don't like that kind of stuff. I think that's hipster. But two of the best burgers that I've ever had have been off menu, because the other one is at a restaurant called the Libertine Social Libertine. It's in the MGM Grand Casino in Las Vegas. It's also off menu.
So here's the thing about this one. It's in a gas station on Buford Highway.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be in a gas station?
So it's super, you know, it's different anyway.
Is this, do they yell at you? Like,
no, it's, I don't think it's like the soup Nazi thing, but it's,
okay. And it's new though.
Well, I've just started paying attention to it. People have been talking about it. It's the hottest new thing, like Stefan says on Saturday Night Live. All right.
Well, hopefully we'll get down with this podcast in time for you to go enjoy some lunch. But anyway, that concludes this episode of the podcast. So I can hear Will's stomach rumbling from here. I can also hear him breathing very loud through this episode. I think he might have a cold. But at any rate, this concludes this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can watch or listen to this podcast via Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast from. Or you can watch it on our YouTube channel or at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.